Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Melissa Block, and this is On Point. It's no secret President Trump loves Fox News and one host in particular.
I get plenty of bad on Fox, too, but at least it's within reason. And Hannity, how good is Hannity, he said. How good is Hannity?
That's the president at a rally last summer, and the feeling is mutual. Sean Hannity has been a key Trump ally and defender with an extremely powerful megaphone. His talk show on Fox News is regularly the most watched program on cable news. Now it turns out Hannity and Trump also share a lawyer, Michael Cohen, who's the target of a federal criminal investigation. That relationship was revealed to gasps of surprise in court in New York this week. It's a relationship that Sean Hannity says is minor. This hour on Point, Fox News, Sean Hannity, and the president. You can join us on air or online. Just how powerful is Sean Hannity? Has he crossed a line by getting too close to President Trump? You can join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from New York is Sarah Ellison. She's a staff writer with The Washington Post covering media and politics. She is one of the reporters on the story that appeared in the paper yesterday. It's titled Hannity's Rising Role in Trump's World. And you can find a link to that on our website, onpointradio.org. Sarah, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
And based on your reporting, how would you describe just how powerful Sean Hannity is and the extent of his ties with the Trump White House?
Well, what's interesting about the relationship between Sean Hannity and President Trump is not just that Hannity gives President Trump like positive coverage, because there have been close relationships between sitting presidents and journalists. It's that Trump relies so much on Hannity for advice about a variety of things, not just when he should tweet and what he could tweet about, but also his own aides, what he should do about certain personnel decisions, how he should think about certain policies. I think that that kind of feedback is something that is almost unprecedented in terms of a relationship between a journalist or a talk show host and a president.
And in fact, according to at least one of the sources you speak with, Hannity is known as the or referred to as the shadow chief of staff.
Yes. I mean, that's one of the things when you think about when you put Sean Hannity up against John Kelly and you think about their sensibility, their differing sensibilities and which person, you know, Donald Trump would be more on the same wavelength with. Would it be Sean Hannity, who's a New Yorker, who knows media, is iconoclastic and is willing to sort of say outrageous things? Or would it be this incredibly disciplined military man, John Kelly, who wants order and structure in everyday dealings in the White House? I think you can see that Trump would naturally gravitate towards wanting to talk to Hannity a lot more than he wants to talk to John Kelly. And we, in fact, know that he does talk to Hannity more than he does John Kelly.
And how is that communication happening? Is it on the phone? Are they having dinner? What's the relationship like?
It's sort of all of the above. They speak several times a week. Some people have told us even several times a day. I think that differs depending on the week or the day. Hannity has gone to Mar-a-Lago several times, had meals with President Trump. So they talk both on the phone quite a bit. And they also, you know, Hannity has taken people down to visit Trump. He was really advocating for a long time that that Trump hire Bill Shine as a communications director. Bill Shine is, of course, Sean Hannity's first producer on Fox News many years ago and mm-hmm. then rose up in the ranks at Fox News and then was let go after the Roger Ailes sexual harassment scandal as somebody who was just too close to Ailes and too implicated in that. But the point is simply that Hannity was advocating for him. Shine is not going to take that job and sort of took himself out of the running. But in terms of who is going to be appointed to kind of important positions in the White House, Sean Hannity definitely has a very strong voice in those decisions.
And let's listen to an excerpt. This is from Fox News last year, 2017. Sean Hannity was given a tour of the White House by the newly elected President Trump. Here's part of their conversation.
I have known you for years. And on a personal level, whenever I've ever talked to you, it's either 11 p.m., 12 midnight, 1 a.m., or 5 or 6 a.m. You're a workaholic.
Well, I like working. I don't think I'm a workaholic. I just like what I'm doing.
So talking all through the night, according to Sean Hannity.
Right. I mean, they talk after Hannity goes off the air. They talk early in the morning. And again, this is all also maybe not coincidentally the same time, you know, that Donald Trump is tweeting a lot of the time. And so I think that they are, they're talking very frequently and they are, in fact, we have sort of reason to believe that Donald Trump talks to Hannity more than he talks to anybody else.
Really? Even more than, say, his own children or before she resigned, but more than he talked to Hope Hicks?
I mean, I think that I wouldn't want to necessarily attest to that, but he is speaking to him a lot.
Yeah, yeah. One of the unnamed sources in your story says of Sean Hannity, he basically has a desk in the place, meaning the White House. Hyperbole, of course. It's not a physical desk. But how do White House staffers react to that? Are they comfortable with how much influence he has?
I mean, I think that White House staffers are in this constant state of trying to figure out what is on Trump's mind and who is in and who is out. This has been a constant of his White House and his administration from the beginning. Every time someone says, things are going to sort of settle down. Certainly when John Kelly was named chief of staff and Reince Priebus left, everyone thought, okay, now things are going to finally calm down. That didn't happen. And I think that Trump likes to keep people on their toes and guess about where his alliance is. So I think that Hannity's proximity to the president and his discussions with him, frequent discussions with him, sort of signal this desire that Trump has to kind of return to discard any advice from the Washington establishment and really go with his gut. And that has been something that he always has wanted to do. Hannity really, if they have one thing in common, if there's one theme that we discovered, it was that Hannity really wants him to reject the Washington establishment and remember his base and constantly think of his base. And Hannity's viewers remind him of who that base is and what they think. And so I think that it's a signal that Trump has, you know, really turned away from the professionals who want to give him advice and has thought, I've been doing this long enough now that I know how to pull these levers and I know how to do this job. And I'm going to go with my gut and talk to somebody who really sees me, who's on my same wavelength, who understands the importance of the media response and the media kind of reaction to things. And I think that that's really where they see eye to eye.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a two-way street, right? I mean, it's not just Sean Hannity advising, counseling the president, but it's also through his television and radio shows. He has a platform to repeat and espouse the president's views. Let's listen to one of Sean Hannity's opening monologues last week. He was railing against Robert Mueller's investigation into Russian collusion.
Where is any evidence of collusion? Show us. Nothing so far. Not a whiff. Nothing. No evidence. Now, instead of concrete facts, information surrounding Russia's illicit actions, we now have in this country what is a runaway investigation. It's spinning out of control. It's led by Mueller and his merry band of Trump-hating deep state sycophants. That's just a fact.
Sarah Ellison, Sean Hannity has made it a point multiple times to say that he's not just a regular journalist. I'm looking at a tweet from yesterday. As a talk show host, he says, sometimes I do report the news straight up with no opinion. Other times I give strong opinion, debate others, and moderate debates. It's all part of being a talk show host, and I am a conservative. He says he's not a journalist in the traditional sense.
Right. I mean, this is where he really wants to have it both ways. He wants to be, you know, he wants to invoke freedom of the press and his ability to voice his opinions. But as a journalist, and then he also says whenever it's not convenient, when he crosses the line in the way that he does frequently, to say that he's not a journalist. And so this is actually kind of very similar to the kind of argument that he was making about Michael Cohen, which is when Michael Cohen named Sean Hannity as his mystery client, Hannity said, well, I was never really a client of his. I did expect attorney-client privilege, and I expected that these things were going to be confidential, but he's not really my attorney. So it's sort of, which is it and which does he want to be? He tries to have it both ways.
Let's go to the phones. We have a call from John in Williamsville, New York. John, you're on the air.
Melissa, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I couldn't disagree more with your guest. I'm a conservative. I listen to Sean Hannity. I listen to Rachel Maddow. I listen to all of them, okay?
And you listen to us.
No one complains. Well, no, that's fine.
Yeah.
No one complains when George Stephanopoulos was in charge of the bimbo elections for the Clintons, or when Chuck Todd used to work for Bernie Sanders. Jake Tapper, I believe, worked for, I believe it might have been even Elizabeth Warren. So please, don't try to tell me what a corrupt situation this is with Sean Hannity. He's a successful radio host. And for a president who is trying to be conservative, to not listen to Sean Hannity, and he doesn't take his advice, because if he would, Mueller would have been gone months ago. Please, don't, you know, we call you leftists, and as liberals, we call you snowflakes because you cannot take it. You have someone who is of influence, who is a radio talk show host, and a television personality who is successful, and you cannot handle it. And I'm not trying to say, hey, listen, I guess in any way I put this is going to be disparaging, but please, just deal with it. And another thing, if I might say, and I'm going to...
Briefly, because we're about to go to the break, yeah?
A little off topic, and this involves Rush Limbaugh, who is kind of in the same vein as him, a big Trump supporter. If the left really, really wanted to compete, just compete on an open thing, get people wanting to dial you into the radio and listen to you, you could knock out 25 million listeners a week on liberal radio because it's just complaining about stuff.
Okay, John, thank you so much for your call. Sarah Ellison, John is making a point there that there are any number of examples of people who have come from administrations, Democratic administrations, who've gone into the media and vice versa, back and forth. We're going to pick up that theme after the break because we do need to take a break now. But keep that thought and we'll come back to it in just a moment. Sarah Ellison is a staff writer with The Washington Post covering media and politics. We're talking about Sean Hannity's ties to President Trump and to Trump's controversial lawyer who is under investigation, Michael Cohen, and two other examples of this from the past. You can join the conversation. What do you make of Sean Hannity's ties to the White House? Or do you have concerns, or do you share the views of our caller from New York? I'm Melissa Block, and this is On Point.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Dell Technologies. Can technology reduce healthcare costs? What will it take to personalize the education of every student? And where does the media go from here? Find these answers and more on Trailblazers, a podcast hosted by best-selling author Walter Isaacson and joined by extraordinary guests who share their stories, insights, and the lessons they learned while transforming entire industries. Stream Trailblazers in your favorite podcast app or at delltechnologies.com/trailblazers.
Hi, I'm Mindy Thomas from NPR's Wow in the World, and this week it's all about Operation Earth, how to be cool to a planet that's getting hot. Check it out with the curious and conscientious kids in your life. Find Wow in the World on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Melissa Block. Fox News star Sean Hannity finds himself in the news now that it's been revealed that he shares a lawyer with President Trump, actually several lawyers, one of whom, Michael Cohen, is the subject of a federal investigation. Here's Sean Hannity on his Fox News show early last week before that relationship with Michael Cohen was revealed. He is defending Cohen.
President Trump's longtime personal attorney, Michael Cohen, just had his office, his home, and his hotel that he was staying in raided by the FBI today in an early morning raid. Now, what that means is Mueller's witch hunt investigation is now a runaway train that is clearly careening off the tracks.
So should Sean Hannity have disclosed his ties to Michael Cohen there or in the past when he interviewed him on the air? You can join the conversation. Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. And joined again by our guest Sarah Ellison, staff writer for The Washington Post. Let's go back to that call that we heard from John just before the break, saying that there is hypocrisy here, a double standard. There are lots of journalists who have been served in Democratic administrations or in campaigns who are now on the air. George Stephanopoulos is frequently cited. What about that argument?
You know, I think that far from complaining about the relationship between Sean Hannity and Donald Trump, what we were attempting to do in our article was simply just illuminate what that relationship was and what level of influence he does have. I think that the difference between someone. I mean, there certainly have been journalists that are close to other presidents, and I do think that George Stephanopoulos does come up quite a bit. But what's interesting is that Hannity's current place is as a journalist covering this sitting president. And I'm not sure, I mean, coming from the Washington Post, certainly Ben Bradley had a very close relationship with JFK, and that was something that people didn't really understand at the time.
Right. We'll be seeing very differently now, yeah.
Right. I mean, you would see, exactly. So I think that there's a valid point to that, but I also would say that there's something about the way that Fox News sees itself and the way that Roger Ailes created Fox News, which was something more, it's a journalistic organization, but it is also a little bit of a political operation. Ailes really wanted to have that kind of, he understood the interplay between politics and media and the power of the image of politicians. And so Fox News has always been very adept at basically getting Republican candidates and sitting Republican politicians to be part of the way that they operate in the news. So I think that it's a little bit of a political party and a little bit of a news operation. And I think that I don't know, I see Fox is maybe they're just particularly good at it, but they are different from other news organizations.
Let's go back to the phones. Rusty calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Rusty, you're on the air.
Hi, Melissa. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Thanks for having me. Okay. I just wanted to, I'm listening to Sarah, and I want to say I'm a 34-year-old white gay man living in Nashville, Tennessee, and I voted for Obama twice, and I voted for Donald Trump.
Uh-huh.
And we'll probably vote for him again in 2020, and here's why.
Okay.
The journalists, quotation marks, giving us this, hey, we're here to help fix the problem, look at this relationship between Sean Hannity and Donald Trump, sounds very much like a one-sided situation. Not to echo John, but a lot of the big points, like Sean has a desk in the White House, unnamed source, if we're going to get the media on the hot seat, then why are we not naming these sources? A lot of what Sarah said was, well, I think here's what's going on. Well, I think this is what the White House staffers feel about it. That means nothing to anybody.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. Sarah Ellison, do you want to talk a bit about the sourcing on this story? A lot of them are anonymous sources in your story, but can you give us a sense of the nature of the folks you were talking to?
Yeah, I mean, we had a pretty, this was not just one or two sources. We talked to at least a dozen people. Some of these people we granted anonymity in order to be able to talk about things that were going on inside the White House. We did have people on the record about the proximity of this relationship, but there is no secret. I mean, there is no one is debating how much Donald Trump and Sean Hannity interact with one another. And I think that that's simply something that you can't really argue with. Whether you find that problematic or not is not something that we pointed out in the story. I mean, I think that's just it is. It is a reality. And so I would just say that we had broad sourcing both inside the West Wing with Republicans who were close to the White House and close to the president. And when people ask for anonymity, we occasionally grant it for them to be able to talk about things that they're not really authorized to speak about.
Rusty, does that make sense to you?
Yes, but I just think in this day and age with how much scrutiny the media is being under, and we have no, as citizens and politicians, the journalists are kind of our only hope, for you to have that angle, why wouldn't you go a step further in this day and age and say, you know what, if you've got a story that that this relationship is something that people need to know more about, then you're going to have to bring us some receipts and prove it, because it's your word against theirs. And okay, now we don't know who to believe. And Donald Trump's on Twitter, you know, taking the power away from everybody, a newspaper, which is beautiful. Millennials, we love that. Why? Because we can get it from the horse's mouth. So for Sarah, no disrespect, but you come with all these ideas and these thoughts and these assumptions with all these unnamed sources. I can't take your word for it either, and it just sounds like you're trying to push a narrative for a different political party than the other.
Okay. Thank you for your call, Rusty. We're going to bring in a couple more folks to join the conversation now. Joining us from Chicago is Joseph Wolfson, writer and columnist for Mediaite and a contributor to the conservative news and opinion site, The Federalist. His recent column in The Federalist is titled, Let's Apply the Sean Hannity Standard to Objective Journalists with Hidden Political Ties. You'll find that at our website, onpointradio.org. Joseph, welcome to On Point.
Thank you for having me.
And from St. Paul, Minnesota, Angelo Carasone joins us. He's president of the liberal media watchdog group Media Matters. Angelo, welcome to you.
Hello.
And Angela, you've been listening to this conversation. You've been writing about, thinking about conflicts of interest between journalists and politicians. What takeaway do you have to that? What, when you think about Sean Hannity's role and the role of others, do, are they the same or are they different?
Yeah, I think that that's a good question. And my initial takeaway is let's not talk about Sean Hannity as a journalist with respect to disclosure, because that seems to be confusing everybody. And I think it's very clear that journalistic operations have standards that they apply as it relates to conflicts of interest. And one really clear one is when there's a current matter on which you're reporting, if you have a financial interest or material interest that could in any way bias you, it's not that you're not allowed to talk about it, but you should inform your audience or report reviewers so that they can, you know, at least take that into account in your reporting. But let's say we concede that Sean Hannity is not a journalist, because I think he's muddied the waters himself. But let's just look at him as a media figure, because he is. And in your introduction, you did note that. You talked about that the size of his platform and his audience. And he does. He does have a platform. He is a media figure, regardless of whether or not he's a journalist. And in that sense, does it mean he has no obligations? And does nobody in that position have any obligations, any responsibilities to their employer as well as to their audience? Because I think I think that's the issue, that when you're in a role like that and you have that platform, it shouldn't, you know, the dividing line from my perspective shouldn't be, are you a journalist or not? It should be, do you have this platform? Do you have a trust relationship with a large audience that is largely enabled by these platforms that help you, you know, maintain it, like Fox News or his radio show? And then in that sense, should you actually just, you know, make these things apparent, especially when you go out there identifying yourself as a journalist? So I think one thing that's helpful, because it seems that seems to be the defense for Hannity, he's not a journalist. The other thing that I would just throw out there quickly at the top is the reaction has been very intense. And from my perspective, you know, you're right. I've been writing and talking about this, and Media Matters has for quite some time. And the thing that surprised me, because my initial response was, but he's shared an attorney already with Trump, which was Sekulow for a while.
Jay Sekulow disclosed it.
That's right. Yes. And so I was like, why is this getting the reaction that it did?
Michael Cohen connection.
That's correct. Yeah, sorry.
No. There are a lot of players to keep track of.
But I think a part of why it did is because, especially from the news media, but the public at large, is that it sort of got to a deeper anxiety or concern that's at issue there, that there's something unique about this dynamic between Trump and Hannity, that it, as you've been talking about already, that it has a lot of influence over our politics and our society and our culture, or at least potential influence, and that there's something unsettling going on there. And I think the evidence for that, in particular with Cohen, is that he doesn't really have clients. Right. It's not like he's a big law firm and Hannity just solicited his input. The fact that he was a third client is significant, because there were three. Right. I mean, there were others that were sort of phased out in the past, but that is significant. And I think it sort of got to a deeper anxiety from my perspective. And so the fact that it wasn't disclosed, especially when Sean Hannity has disclosed another lawyer that he's worked with, whenever David Limbaugh's on, and David Limbaugh did work for him years ago, I would point out. Sean Hannity always points out the fact that David Limbaugh did legal work for him many, many years ago.
Brother of Rush Limbaugh, I believe. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Even when it's not relevant to the topic, he discloses it. So why does he always disclose that, but in this case didn't? So I think that's partly why there's this firestorm. So
okay. Angela,
that's my initial observation.
Stay with us, Angela, and let's turn to Joseph Wolfson with The Federalist, listening to what Angela was saying there, Joseph. Your thoughts on disclosure and whether Sean Hannity crossed a line here or should have disclosed his connection as he was talking about the Michael Cohen story on his programs.
I do believe that there was a huge lapse in judgment on behalf of Hannity's part. It's no secret that he's a staunch Trump supporter, and in the wake of the FBI raid, he was defending Michael Cohen. He definitely should have disclosed the fact that he sought legal advice from him without having to have any sort of financial transaction involved. However, I do think there's a huge overreaction to this as well, because in the end, Sean Hannity is an opinion guy. It'd be one thing if he had a platform of a moderate, or at least perceived himself to be as a moderate, like Jake Tapper or Bret Baier or John Dickerson. But this is Trump's number one guy on cable news. And I think the fact that there's this huge, you know, wall-to-wall coverage and everyone's talking about it. I think it's definitely overblown. And what doesn't get enough attention are the folks who do call themselves objective journalists, not opinion journalists or whatever Sean Hannity's calling himself, that have political ties. I think that's not getting enough coverage. And I think, I mean, again, Hannity, I think, was in the wrong for not disclosing from the top that he was technically a client of Michael Cohen's.
Mm-hmm.
But the reaction, I think, is pretty jarring in comparison to other people in the media.
Got it. You're talking about a double standard or different rules applying. Let's listen to what Sean Hannity had to say on his Fox News show on Monday. This was after revelations came out in federal court in New York that he was client number three, the heretofore anonymous client number three of Michael Cohen.
There's been all kinds of wild speculation from the mainstream media today about me and President Trump's personal attorney, Michael Cohen, after my name was mentioned in court proceedings earlier today. Let me set the record straight. Here's the truth. Michael Cohen never represented me in any legal matter. I never retained his services. I never received an invoice. I never paid Michael Cohen for legal fees.
And again, resuming our conversation with Sarah Ellison, Angelo Carasone, Joseph Wolfson, let me read you a comment that came in on our Facebook page from J. Chris Henry. Sean Hannity is reflexive. I'm not Cohen's client. I never paid him a retainer. Response to Cohen's files seized may have guaranteed prosecutor inspection. If he isn't a client, there is no attorney-client privilege. Sarah Ellison, I know you're not an attorney, but this does raise all sorts of questions about just what that relationship is and is he protected?
Right. I mean, I think that the two camps here, Michael Cohen and Sean Hannity, have very different stories about whether there is an attorney-client privilege or whether there isn't. You know, Cohen makes a kind of – his lawyers make a big deal about naming Sean Hannity. Sean Hannity says, well, I thought there was going to be confidentiality, but we weren't – I never retained him. So you can't, in fact, have it both ways. If there is no attorney-client privilege that doesn't exist. And so I think that it does open him up to that kind of scrutiny that we have been talking about. I wanted to just say one other thing, though, which is that the discussion about whether he should have disclosed or not, the explanation for why he was talking to Michael Cohen and what he was talking to Michael Cohen about is I think he said something like almost exclusively about real estate.
Right. And then he may have given him $10 at one point, which was puzzling.
Right. He may have given him $10 and say, like, you know, we're protected. So there's – I think the reason that journalists are kind of digging into this is that it doesn't quite make sense. We don't know what the relationship was. If it was really anodyne, why not simply say what it was and move on? I think that the anxiety people have is – these things aren't disclosed until people are forced to disclose them. And so that's why journalists dig in.
Let's go back to the phones. Julia is calling from Baltimore, Maryland. Julia, welcome to On Point.
Thank you. Hi, Melissa.
Hey.
I was just listening to the discussion a moment ago about whether Sean Hannity is even considered a, you know, journalist. And, you know, he's, you know, let's not consider him a journalist because mm-hmm. he's just, you know, a pundit or whatever. But I think that, you know, that's the reason why that's a real discussion. And I, you know, it concerns me is because so many people that watch his program, that he, to them, he is a journalist. They're getting, you know, quote unquote facts from him. And that's, to me, when people, that's where their news source is coming from. They're not looking at that program and thinking, I'm just listening to this guy's opinions. They're taking that in and then, you know, to maybe telling their friends at their water cooler, like, oh, this, I heard this on the news last night. And that's what they're saying. I heard it on the news, you know, instead of Sean Hannity gave this opinion, you know.
Julia, thank you so much for your call. Angelo Carasone, you want to respond to what we heard there from Julia?
Yeah, I think Julia makes an interesting point. And if we could just look at if you go one layer deeper to what Sean Hannity is actually saying on his program, it actually reinforces Julia's point a lot. So we did an analysis of his monologues from the middle of May of 2017 to September, and 90% of them, and that was obviously a very intense period in the initial sort of stand-up of the Mueller investigation, so that's why we analyzed that period. 90% of his opening monologues were largely about undermining the news media and the press, and that was not really an outlier. By and large, that's a fixture of his nightly programming. So on the one hand, he is consistently telling his audience that everybody else, including journalists, are lying to them. And that the only real people that they can trust is sort of himself and a very, very, very small group of others. And that is the reason why I think it does make a difference. I don't think it would change their perception if he disclosed, but I do think his relationship with them is significant.
We are talking about Sean Hannity and his close ties to the president. He's been called the shadow chief of staff by some White House insiders. I'm Melissa Block, and you're listening to On Point.
Are you funnier than Fallon? More amusing than Aziz? More clever than Click and Clack? Well, if you've got an idea that'll make people laugh, enter WBUR's Next Great Show contest for a chance to get your show on the air. To find out more, go to WBUR.org/nextgreatshow.
This is On Point. I'm Melissa Block. We were talking about the connections between Sean Hannity of Fox News and President Trump. You can join the conversation. Are the rest of the media guilty of the same cozy relationships, or is this different? Fox News watchers, are you troubled by this or not? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. My guests are Angelo Carasone, president of the liberal media watchdog group Media Matters, Joseph Wolfson with the conservative news and opinion site The Federalist, and Sarah Ellison, who covers media and politics for The Washington Post. Welcome back to you, the three of you. We were talking about other journalists who may or may not have conflicts of a similar or different nature. George Stephanopoulos has come up. He's an anchor for ABC News. Before that, he was communications director for President Bill Clinton, and it was revealed in 2015 as when he was working as a journalist, that he had contributed $75,000 to the Clinton Foundation and had not disclosed that fact. Here's Sean Hannity on Fox News going after George Stephanopoulos.
You don't think this is just an innocent mistake? Once a Clinton crony hack, always one. He didn't think to disclose this. I don't buy it for 1 minute.
Joseph Wilson, didn't think to disclose this. I don't buy it. We were talking before, and Angela was raising the point that people who turn to Sean Hannity are not necessarily hearing news. Could you argue that Sean Hannity's viewers and listeners know that, and that's why they're turning to him? They are looking for opinion.
Yeah, I mean, they seek people like Sean Hannity because, you know, the rest of the mainstream media does not. They don't give an honest take of the situation. For example, like you said, with George Stephanopoulos not disclosing his $75,000 donation to the Clinton campaign, this is a man who was almost moderating a presidential debate, you know, whether it was in the Democratic primaries or it was up for consideration in the general. And this is the face of ABC News, and he's literally giving money to Hillary Clinton's campaign. And, you know, so there's a huge freak out with Sean Hannity not disclosing that he has a professional tie to President Trump's lawyer who's caught up in scandal. Here, George Stephanopoulos could have been giving a campaign contribution to the next president of the United States. So I do think there is this huge double standard, and, you know, two wrongs don't make a right, but both should be discussed seriously.
Let me bring up a broader question about Fox News itself. And Sarah, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this. On our website, Mark788 has written, Fox News has taken huge hits, both in monetary and credibility terms, with the firings of Bill O'Reilly and Roger Ailes in the last couple of years, not to mention the sponsor advertisement boycotts and dropping of ad dollars on shows like Laura Ingraham's that have taken a bite out of the Fox News wallet. And Mark is asking, can Fox afford to lose someone like Sean Hannity? Do you see this hurting, this debate, this controversy hurting Fox in any way? Is Sean Hannity's job at all in peril, or maybe it's even strengthened?
Well, I think that what is incredible about Fox News is they have lost some of their biggest names, Bill O'Reilly, Megyn Kelly, of course, Roger Ailes, who was the person who conceived of Fox News to begin with, and they're still sort of trucking along. What's interesting about the media ecosystem that Fox News inhabits is they created this sort of conservative media ecosystem that where they now are kind of an establishment figure in, and there are a lot of upstarts that are challenging them, kind of from the right. InfoWars is one. There are others as well. I think that what Fox has discovered with after Ailes and with somebody like Sean Hannity having such a close relationship with President Trump is that they are now in kind of pole position in terms of communicating exactly what Donald Trump says to people who want to hear that. And the irony of Fox News is that it was harder on President Trump when Roger Ailes was still in charge than it is now. And I think that they are benefiting from that kind of direct pipeline where there isn't as much of a challenge to what the president is saying. Now, there are different voices on Fox. Shep Smith is one. Brett Baer is another. Those are people who are on the news side. But Fox really does occupy this singular place right now where it is kind of a direct pipeline of what the president is saying.
Yeah, and they would distinguish themselves clearly from Sean Hannity. Brett Baer did go golfing with the president the other day. Does that raise any questions for you?
That, to me, seems like a much more kind of traditional relationship between a journalist who might be somewhat favorable to a president. And that could be, you know, that's a more traditional relationship, I think. I think what we're seeing, that's a perfect example of the difference between the kind of relationship that Brett Baer might have with the president and the kind of relationship that Sean Hannity does.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones and to Dana. I'm not sure if it's Dana or Dana calling from Brandon, Florida. You're on the air.
Hi, Melissa. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks. Thanks for calling.
My point is very simple. I think when people decide to become a journalist and you occupy that space, be that journalist position in print, radio, or news, you decide and you make a conscious decision to report the facts. Not your opinions, but the facts. Once you leave that space and then you decide to work for a politician or a political group, then you can maybe muddy the waters a bit with the facts and your truth.
So,
however,
yeah.
when you're in the seat as journalist, you need to report the facts and nothing else. If there comes a story, like currently with Hannity, and there's the slightest chance that it could appear that your involvement with a doctor, a lawyer, or whoever that the president also has an issue with, you should speak on it first, because all that's going to do is help your case and help your position.
Dana, thank you for your call. And it's interesting to note here, Sarah Ellison, that Sean Hannity does not come from a journalism background. I mean, he did not approach this through the traditional journalist routes.
Right. I mean, I think that this gets again to the sort of founding principle of Fox News, which is that the mainstream media is not telling you the truth. And that has been something that Fox has been talking about, and not just Hannity, that the entire gamut of Fox News staffers and people who are on-air talent have been telling people for 20 years that the mainstream media is misrepresenting the truth. And I think that is something that has really tilled the ground for someone like Hannity, who does speak to a very loyal audience. I think that journalists make mistakes all the time. There are errors and corrections. I think it's fair to point out that Sean Hannity has pushed a lot of stories that have ended up being entirely false, like that Barack Obama birther conspiracy, or that Seth Rich was murdered by Democratic operatives for leaking the emails from the DNC. And so I think that there is a credibility question now that, you know, we are in a moment where those kinds of voices really resonate with people. Mm-hmm. But I think that we can talk about what is actually factually being reported on air as a way of kind of judging whether someone, not whether they're a journalist or not, but whether they have a kind of credibility in terms of their relationship with the truth.
Joseph Wolfson, what do you think about Sarah's point?
Yeah, I think Fox News, a lot of their programming is opinion, of course, and then they have a lot of, you know, straight news reporting that honestly does not get a fair shake among, you know, the rest of the media, because, like you mentioned, there's, you know, Shep Smith, Brett Baer, there's Martha McCallum, Shannon Bream, Bill Hemmer. There are, you know, honest and trustworthy journalists that work for that network that don't get much attention, and they do talk about the latest reports that are not so flattering to President Trump, whether it's involving the Russia investigation or Stormy Daniels. So I do think there is this this generalization that Sean Hannity and Tucker Carlson and Laura Ingraham are all of Fox News, and granted they earn the most viewers for the network, but they don't represent the entirety of that network. So I definitely understand that they do have this appeal, definitely to Trump supporters, but they do, as a network, do report on the latest breaking news as well, even though it's not helpful to the current president.
Let's go back to the phones and to Peter, who's calling from Boston, here in Boston. Peter, welcome to On Point.
Yeah, I just preface my right. I actually did vote for Trump, and I have a lot of problems with some of the things he's done. That being said, I could never have voted for Hillary or Bernie. But I watch, I still read the Daily Globe, been for 50 years. I still watch, I jump back and forth in the cable. And just a couple things.
Sure.
Kennedy, I don't think, ever comes across as he is definitely an opinionated guy, and you're clear when you watch him. However, someone who I watch, CNBC and CNN, I mean, 90% of the other cable, Morning Joe, are so anti-Trump.
On MSNBC, uh-huh.
Yeah, but I mean, it's the hubris now in, like, the Washington Post. I mean, they'd love to get Hannity booted off the air. It's like, you got to listen to all of them. You take everybody with a grain of salt. But, I mean, it's the hubris now in the double standard now. That somehow Hannity he's close to, I think there's a jealousy thing here that maybe, you know, he's connected now and he's got an ear to the president. And to me, it's like the analogy of, like, hey, for every college that's, is it 90%, 95% of your college professors are raving liberals? You don't get conservative opinions. Thank goodness you got Fox to at least balance it off. And again, you've got to take them with a grain of salt. You read and you kind of discern, but that's the one network. Who else think of it besides Fox gives a conservative kind of opinion?
And Sarah Ellison, I want to give you a chance to respond, because Peter there in Boston was saying that folks at the Washington Post want to get Hannity booted off the air. I am quite sure you're going to want to take issue with that.
Yeah, I would just say that the Washington Post has no dog in the fight about whether Sean Hannity remains on the air or is off the air. In fact, I think that I'll repeat that what we were just trying to do was simply illuminate the relationship between this really powerful journalist and the sitting president of the United States. And I think that that's something that, you know, whether you like Sean Hannity or not, is worth knowing about. We definitely don't have an opinion on whether or not he should stay on or off the air.
Angelo Carasone with Media Matters, where do you see this conversation headed? Or do you feel like we're going to be having this conversation for the rest of President Trump's presidency?
I think we are headed to a place where there's going to have to be some way of reconciling Fox's actual business interests with their political interests, because the reality is their advertising revenue is down not because they lost Bill O'Reilly. In fact, their advertising revenue didn't start declining 20% until September of 2017, after Sean Hannity started losing a significant amount of advertisers. So that's a critical thing, because I think the more they continue to be sandwiched between these two realities right now, where they try to grapple with, one, they're still a company that has to be profitable. On the other hand, their political operation side of it, there has to be a reconciliation. So I think at some point that question will be forced. I don't think we're quite there yet, but I think the winds are blowing in that direction. I think on the other hand, there's this undertone that's making me somewhat uncomfortable, and that's this idea that seems to be percolating, that if you would just identify yourself as an opinion person and you have a big platform, mm-hmm. that there are no rules for you, that there are no standards, and you can do whatever you want. And that scares me. And I find that really uncomfortable and unsettling, that if you just brand yourself as opinion, it doesn't matter. And I think it's reckless. I think when you have a big platform, you have a responsibility, not necessarily to adhere to journalistic standards. If you don't want to be a journalist, that's fine. You can be an entertainer, but there still has to be some standard, some mechanism that says, where's the line? And that's what makes me slightly uncomfortable, that every time there's an issue that there are no standards. And I think that's what's really here. That's what's so uncomfortable about this Fox situation. He didn't even tell Fox News. I'd be much more comfortable with the scenario if he informed Fox and Fox had some kind of internal mechanism that said, oh, no, this doesn't meet our standards for disclosure. I mean, we're a small nonprofit organization. We have a social media policy. We have policies about what our staff have to inform us about if they wanted to take outside work. That doesn't mean the answer is always no, but there's a mechanism for assessing those kind of things so that we can have some core integrity. And that's what makes me uncomfortable. Opinion just means you can say anything? I don't think so.
Let's go back to the phones and to Tampa, Florida. Joe is calling. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Melissa. My point is that even though Hannity is not an official member of the White House staff, in all reality, he's serving as Trump's czar of propaganda. You could call him the director of misinformation if that office were to be brought into the White House instead of a director of information.
Well, he's got millions of viewers and listeners. He's got incredibly popular programs on both TV and radio. Sarah Ellison, just how popular, how big is Sean Hannity's audience?
Well, Sean Hannity is consistently rated the highest rated show on Fox News, and Fox News is the most popular cable news channel and has been for years. There's been a little bit of a challenge from Rachel Maddow recently. I think what's interesting about Fox is that the rule of thumb was always that Fox News was best when it was in opposition. So that meant that with a Democratic president, people wanted to watch Fox News to listen to some of Fox's opinion hosts sort of attack that sitting president. What's fascinating right now is that even though, and again, there are different voices, we all understand that now, not everyone is Sean Hannity, and he doesn't represent all of Fox News. But that alignment has actually really benefited Fox News. What we saw with Megyn Kelly when she was challenging Donald Trump is that it actually hurt her ratings. And I think that that was something that the Murdochs at Fox News, who own Fox News, really understood. And so I think that gives Hannity a lot more power inside the organization.
Challenging President Trump in that presidential debate.
In that first debate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sarah Ellison is staff writer for The Washington Post. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
We also heard this hour from Angelo Carasone, president of Media Matters. He spoke with us from St. Paul. Angelo, thanks to you as well.
Thank you.
And Joseph Wolfson, contributor to Mediaite and The Federalist. He joined us from Chicago. Joseph, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter and follow us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Melissa Block. This is On Point.